This is Audible.
We Shouldn't. Written by Vi Keeland. Narrated by Andy Arndt and Sebastian York. Chapter 1. Bennett. What the hell is she doing? When the light turned green, I kept jogging in place rather than crossing. The scene unfolding across the street was just too entertaining to interrupt. My car was parked in front of the office, and a curly-haired blonde with killer legs was leaning over the windshield, her hair apparently somehow stuck in my wiper blade. Why? I had no fucking idea, but she seemed pretty pissed off, and the sight was comical to watch, so I kept my distance, curious to see how this would play out. It was a typical breezy day in the Bay Area, and a gust of wind kicked up, causing her long hair to fly all over the place as she struggled with my car. That seemed to upset her even more. Frustrated, she yanked on her hair, but the clump wrapped around the wiper was too big, and it didn't come loose. Rather than trying to unwind it gently, she yanked harder, this time standing up as she tugged at her hair with both hands. That did the trick. Her hair came loose. Unfortunately, my wiper blade was still attached to it, dangling. She grumbled what I suspected was a string of curses, and then made a last futile attempt to remove the tangled mess. The people who had crossed the street when I should have now began to approach where she stood, and Blondie suddenly seemed to realize someone might take notice of her. Instead of being angry that this crazy woman had damaged my one-week-old Audi, I couldn't help but laugh when she glanced around, then opened her raincoat and tucked the dangling wiper inside. She smoothed down her hair, cinched her belt, and turned to walk away as if nothing had happened. I thought that was the end of the show, but apparently she thought better of what she'd done, or so it seemed. Turning back, she returned to my car. She then proceeded to dig into her pocket for something and stick it under the remaining windshield wiper before scurrying off. When the light turned green again, I crossed and jogged to my car, curious as to what her note would say. She must have been stuck there for a while and written it before I saw her because she hadn't taken out a pen while I watched. Lifting the remaining wiper, I slipped out the note and turned it over, only to find what she'd left behind wasn't an apology note at all. The blonde had left me a damn parking ticket. What a morning. My car vandalized, no hot water at the gym next to the office, and now one of the elevators was out of service again. The morning rush crammed into the only functioning elevator car like sardines in a can. I looked down at my watch. Shit. My meeting with Jonas was supposed to start 5 minutes ago. And we were stopping at every damn floor. The doors slid open on the 7th floor, one floor below mine. "Excuse me," a woman behind me said. I stepped to the side to let people out, and the woman caught my attention as she passed. She smelled good, like suntan lotion and the beach. I watched her step off. Just as the elevator doors began to close, she turned back and our gazes locked for a brief second. Gorgeous blue eyes smiled at me. I started to smile back, then stopped, blinking and taking in her whole face, and her hair, just as the doors slid shut. Holy shit. The woman from this morning. I tried to get the person standing in front of the elevator panel on the other side of the car to press the open button, but we'd started moving before she even figured out I was talking to her. Perfect. Just perfect. Goes with the rest of the damn day. I arrived in Jonas's office almost 10 minutes behind schedule. Sorry I'm late. Crappy morning. No problem. Things are a little hectic here today with the move. I sat down in one of the visitor's chairs across from the boss, and let out a deep breath. "How's your team doing with everything going on today?" he asked. "As well as can be expected. Would go over much better if I could tell everyone their jobs were safe. No one is losing any job at the moment." If you could stop that sentence after the word job, that would be great. Jonas sat back in his chair and sighed. "I know it's not easy, but this merger will be good for the company in the end. Ren may be the smaller player, but they have a nice portfolio of clients. 2 weeks ago, the company I'd been working for since straight out of college had merged with another large ad agency. Everyone had been on edge ever since. nervous about what the acquisition of Wren Media meant for their position at Foster Burnett. For the last 2 weeks, I'd spent half my mornings reassuring my team, even though I had no fucking idea what the future of two major ad houses consolidating might look like. We were the bigger company, so that's what I'd been reminding people. Today was the physical consolidation into the San Francisco office where I worked. People carrying boxes had infiltrated our space, and we were supposed to smile and greet them. It wasn't fucking easy, especially when my own job could be at stake. This company didn't need two creative directors, and Wren had its own marketing team, which was moving into our space right at this very moment. While Jonas had assured me my job with the company was safe, he hadn't yet said that any of us wouldn't be transferred. The Dallas office was larger, and a recent rumor had floated around that more transfers were in the cards. I had no plans on moving anywhere. "So, tell me about the woman I'm going to crush," I asked around. Jim Falcon worked at Wren for a few years and said she was pretty close to retirement anyway. "Hope I'm not going to make some blue-haired woman cry." Jonas's brows drew down. "Retirement? Annalise?" "Jim told me she uses a walker sometimes. Trouble with her knees or some shit. I had to get maintenance to widen the aisle between the cubicles where the staff sits so she can get through. But I refuse to feel guilty for whipping the ass of this woman just because she's older and has some health problems. I'm sending her packing to Texas if it comes down to it." "Bennett, I think maybe Jim is confused. Annalise doesn't have a walker." I shook my head. "Are you kidding? Don't even tell me that. It cost me a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue Label to get my work order moved up to the top of the list with the maintenance department." Jonas shook his head. "Annalise isn't..." He stopped mid-sentence and looked up over my head toward the door. "Good timing. Here she is now. Come on in, Annalise. I want you to meet Bennett Fox." I turned in my chair to see my new competition, the old biddy I was about to annihilate, and nearly fell over. My head swung back to Jonas. "Who is this?" "This is Annalise O'Neill, your counterpart over at Wren. I guess Jim Falcon confused her with someone else." I turned back to the woman walking toward me. Annalise O'Neill certainly wasn't the old woman I had pictured in my head. Not in the fucking slightest. She was late 20s, at best, and gorgeous. Drop-dead gorgeous. Killer long tanned legs, curves that could cause a man to drive off a cliff, and a wild mane of wavy blonde hair that framed a seriously model-worthy face. Without warning, my body reacted. My dick, which had been floundering around disinterested for the last month since news of the merger broke, suddenly perked up. Testosterone squared my shoulders and lifted my chin. If I were a peacock, my colorful feathers would have fanned wide. My competition was a fucking knockout. I shook my head and laughed. Jim Falcon hadn't made any mistake. The fucker did it to screw with me. The guy was a wise ass, I should have known. He must have been laughing his ass off when I had the guys from maintenance disassembling and reassembling the cubicles to make room for her walker. What a dick. Although it was pretty funny. He got me, that's for sure. But that wasn't what had me smiling from ear to ear. Nope, not at all. Shit was about to get interesting, and it had nothing to do with my kicking the ass of a woman who walked just fine. My competition, Annalise O'Neill, the beautiful woman standing right in front of me inside my boss's office, the woman I was about to go head-to-head with, was also the woman from this morning, the one who had ripped my wiper blade off and left me a damn parking ticket in its place, the smiling woman from the elevator. "Annalise, is it?" I stood, straightening my tie with a nod. "Bennett Fox." "Nice to meet you, Bennett." "Oh, trust me, the pleasure is all mine."
Chapter 2. Annalise. Figures. It was the gorgeous guy I'd seen in the elevator, and here I thought we'd had a little spark. Bennett Fox grinned like he'd already been named my boss and extended his hand. "Welcome to Foster Burnett." He wasn't just good-looking. He knew it, too. That would be Foster, Burnett, and Wren, as of a few weeks ago, right? I iced my subtle reminder that this was now our place of employment with a smile, suddenly thankful my parents had made me wear braces until I was nearly 16.
Of course.
My new nemesis smiled just as brightly. Apparently his parents had sprung for orthodontic care, too. Bennett Fox was also tall. I once read an article that said the average height of a man in the U.S. was 5'9.5". Less than 15% of men stood taller than 6 feet. Yet the average height of more than 68% of Fortune 500 CEOs was over 6 feet. Subconsciously, we related size to power in more ways than just brawn. Andrew was 6'2". I'd guess this guy was about the same. Bennett pulled out the guest chair next to him.
Please, have a seat.
Tall and with gentlemanly manners. I disliked him already. During the ensuing 20-minute pep talk given by Jonas Stern, in which he attempted to convince us we weren't vying for the same position, but instead forging the way as leaders of the now largest ad agency in the United States, I stole glances at Bennett Fox. Shoes. Definitely expensive. Conservative. Oxford in style, but with a modern edge of top stitching. Ferragamo would be my guess.
Big feet, too.
Suit. Dark navy. Tailored to fit his tall, broad frame. The kind of understated luxury that said he had money, but didn't need to flaunt it to impress you. He had one long leg casually crossed over the other knee, as if we were discussing the weather, rather than being told everything we'd worked 12 hours a day, 6 days a week for was suddenly at risk of being in vain. At one point, Jonas had said something we both agreed with, and we looked at each other, nodding. Given the opportunity for a closer inspection, my eyes roamed his handsome face. Strong jaw, daringly straight, perfect nose. The type of bone structure passed down from generation to generation that was better and more useful than any monetary inheritance. But his eyes were the showstopper. A deep, penetrating green that popped from his smooth, tanned skin. Those were currently staring right at me. I looked away, returning my attention to Jonas. So what happens at the end of the 90-day integration period? Will there be 2 creative directors of West Coast Marketing? Jonas looked back and forth between us and sighed.
No, but no one is going to lose his or her job. I was just about to tell Bennett the news. Rob Gatz announced he'll be retiring in a few months, so there will be a position opening up for a creative director to replace him.
I had no idea what that meant, but apparently Bennett did.
So, one of us gets shipped off to Dallas to replace Rob in the Southwest region? He asked.
Jonas's face told me Bennett wouldn't be happy about the prospect of heading to Texas.
Yes.
All 3 of us let that sink in for a moment. The possibility of having to relocate to Texas shifted my mind back into gear, though.
Who will make the decision? I asked.
Because obviously you've been working with Bennett.
Jonas shook his head and waved off what I was beginning to question. Decisions like this, where 2 senior management positions are being merged into 1 office, the board will oversee and make the final determination of who gets first pick.
Bennett was just as confused as me.
The board members don't work with us on a daily basis. No, they don't. So they've come up with a method of making their decision. Which is? It'll be based on 3 major client pitches. You'll both come up with campaigns on your own and present them. The clients will pick which they like best.
Bennett looked rattled for the first time. His perfect composure and self-assuredness took a hit as he leaned forward and raked long fingers through his hair.
You've got to be kidding me. More than 10 years, and my job here comes down to a few pitches. I've landed $500 million of ad accounts for this company. I'm sorry, Bennett. I really am.
But one of the conditions of the Wren merger was that due consideration be given to the Wren employees in positions that might be eliminated because of duplicity.
The deal almost didn't go through because Mrs. Wren was so insistent that she not sell her husband's company, only to have the new organization strip away all of Wren's hardworking employees.
That made me smile. Mr. Wren was taking care of his employees even after he was gone.
I'm up for the challenge.
I looked at Bennett, who was clearly pissed off.
May the best woman win.
He scowled.
You mean man.
We sat for another hour, going through all of our current accounts and discussing which would be reassigned, so we could focus on integrating our teams and the pitches that would decide our fate. When we got to the Bianchi Winery account, Bennett said,
"That's in 2 days. I'm ready for that pitch."
I had known there were two competitors other than me presenting to the account. Hell, I'd been the one to suggest the work go out for pitches to make sure they were getting the best advertising out there. But I hadn't been aware that Foster Burnett was one of the other firms involved. And, of course, the merger changed everything. I couldn't afford to let the new management think I could possibly lose an existing account. "I don't think it's necessary for us both to pitch. Bianchi has been my account for years. In fact, because of my relationship with them, I was the one who suggested..." The jerk interrupted me.
"Mrs. Bianchi was very interested in my early ideas. I have no doubt she'll go with one of my concepts."
God, this guy is arrogant. "I'm sure your ideas are great, but what I was going to say is that I have a relationship with the winery, and I'm certain they'll work with me exclusively if I suggest that, because..." He interrupted me again.
"If you're so certain, why not let the client decide? Sounds to me like you're more afraid of a little competition than certain of your relationship."
Bennett looked at Jonas.
"The client should see both."
All right," Jonas said.
"We're one company now. I'd rather say one pitch for an existing client, but since you're both done already, I don't see any harm in showing both. As long as you two are capable of putting on a united front for Foster, Burnett, and Wren, we should let the client be the judge on this one."
An obnoxious smile slid across Bennett's face.
"Fine with me. I'm not afraid of a little competition, unlike some people."
"We're not competition anymore. Perhaps that hasn't sunk into your head yet." I sighed and mumbled under my breath. It does look like the information would have to penetrate a lot of hair gel to get there. Bennett ran his fingers through his lush mane.
"You noticed my great hair, huh?"
I rolled my eyes. Jonas shook his head.
"Okay, you two. I can see this isn't going to be easy, and I'm sorry to do this to you both."
He turned to Bennett.
"We've worked together a long time. I know this must sting, but you're a professional, and I know you'll do your best to get through this."
Then he turned to me.
"And we may have just met, Annalise, but I've heard nothing but wonderful things about you two."
After that, Jonas asked Bennett to see if he could find a spare office for me to set up in for now. Apparently, people were still being moved around, and my permanent office wasn't ready yet. Well, as permanent as it might be under the circumstances. I stayed behind to discuss some of my accounts with Jonas until early afternoon. When we were done, he walked me to Bennett's office. Foster Burnett's space was definitely nicer than what I was used to at Wren. Bennett's office was sleek and modern, not to mention twice the size of my old one. He was on the phone but motioned for us to come in.
"Yes, I can do that. How about Friday at around 3?
Bennett looked at me, but spoke into the phone. While we waited for him to finish his call, Jonas's phone rang. He excused himself and stepped out of the office to speak. Jonas returned just as Bennett hung up.
"I need to run upstairs for a meeting," Jonas said. "Were you able to find a place for Annalise?" "I found the perfect spot for her."
Something about the way Bennett responded seemed sarcastic, but I didn't know the man well, and it didn't seem to bother Jonas at all.
"Great. It's been a long day with a lot for you both to take in. Don't stay too late tonight."
"Thanks, Jonas," I said.
"Have a good night."
I watched him depart, and then turned my attention back to Bennett. Both of us must have been waiting for the other to speak first. I finally broke the silence.
"So, this whole situation is awkward."
Bennett came out from behind his desk.
"Jonas is right. It's been a long day. Why don't I show you where I set you up? I think I'm going to call it an early night for a change."
"That would be great. Thank you." I followed him down the long hall until we came to a closed door. There was one of those nameplate holders on the door, but the name had been slipped out. Bennett nodded his head toward it.
"I'll call down to purchasing and get them to order you a new sign for your office before I go tonight."
Well, that was nice of him. Maybe it wouldn't be so awkward between us after all.
"Thank you."
He smiled and opened the door, stepping aside for me to enter first.
"No problem. Here you go." Home sweet home.
I took a step in just as Bennett flipped on the lights. What the hell? The room had a folding table and a chair set up, but it was definitely not an office. It was a small supply closet at best, and not even the nice kind with organized chrome shelves where office supplies were stored. This was a janitor's closet, one that smelled like bathroom cleaner and day-old musty water, most likely because of the yellow bucket and wet mop sitting beside my new makeshift desk. I turned to Bennett. You expect me to work in here? Like this? A flicker of amusement danced in his eyes.
Well, you'll also be needing paper, of course.
My brow furrowed. Is he joking? Reaching into his pocket, he walked to the folding table and slapped a lone piece of paper down at the center of it. Turning to exit, he stopped directly in front of me and winked.
You have a good night. I'm going to go get my car fixed now.
Stunned, I was still standing just inside the closet when the door slammed behind him. The whoosh of air from its closing caused the paper he'd left to fly into the air. It floated for a few seconds, then settled at my feet. I stared at it blankly at first. Squinting as it came into focus, I realized something was written on it. He left me a note? I bent and picked it up for a closer look. What the hell? The paper Bennett had left wasn't a note at all. It was a parking ticket. And not any parking ticket. My parking ticket. The same damn one I'd left on someone's windshield this morning.
Chapter 3.
I need a drink like you wouldn't believe. I pulled out a chair and looked around for a waiter before I'd even sat down. And here I thought you wanted to hang out with me because of my winning personality, not the free meal you get every week. My best friend, Madison, had the best job in the world, a food critic for the San Francisco Observer. 4 nights a week, she went to a different restaurant for a meal that would eventually turn into a review. On Thursdays, I joined her. Basically, she was my free meal ticket. More often than not, it was the only day I left the office before 9 and the only decent meal I ate all week because of the 60-hour work weeks I tended to put in. A lot of good that's done me. The waiter walked over and extended the wine menu. Madison waved him off. We'll have 2 Merlots. Whatever you recommend is fine. The order was her standard answer, and I knew it was the first step in reviewing the restaurant's service. She liked to evaluate what the waiter brought. Would he ask her questions about her taste so he could make a good choice, or go for the most expensive glass on the menu for the sole purpose of maximizing his tip?
No problem. I'll pick something out.
Actually, I held up a finger, can I change that order, please? Make that 1 Merlot and 1 Tito's and seltzer with lime.
Of course.
Madison barely waited until the waiter was out of earshot.
Uh-oh. Vodka seltzer. What happened? Is Andrew seeing someone?
I shook my head. No, worse. Her eyes widened.
Worse than Andrew seeing someone? You had a car accident again?
Well, maybe I exaggerated a little. Finding out my boyfriend of 8 years was dating another woman would definitely devastate me. 3 months ago, he'd told me he needed a break. Not exactly the 3 little words I had expected him to say at the end of our night out for Valentine's Day dinner. But I'd tried to be understanding. He'd had a lot of change over the last year. His second novel had tanked, his 60-year-old father was diagnosed with liver cancer and died 3 weeks to the day after the diagnosis, and his mother decided to remarry only 9 months after becoming a widow. So I agreed to the temporary separation, even though his idea of a break was more Ross than Rachel. We were both free to see other people, if we wanted to. He'd sworn there was no one else, and it wasn't his intention to go out and sleep around, but he also felt an agreement not to see other people would keep us tethered and not allow him the freedom he felt he needed. And when it came to driving, I'd hated it ever since the first month I got my license because of a pretty bad accident that had turned me into a nervous driver. I'd never gotten over it. Just last year I'd had a small fender bender in a parking lot, and any of my fear that had been quelled reared its ugly head. Another accident so soon might push me over the edge.
Maybe not as bad as that, I said. But it's up there. What happened? Bad first day at the new office?
And here I was thinking I'd get to hear about all the hot guys at the new place of employment. Madison didn't understand Andrew's need for a break, and she'd been encouraging me to get back out in the dating world and move on. The waiter arrived with our drinks, and Madison told him we weren't ready to order. She asked him to give us 10 minutes to decide. I sipped my vodka. It burned going down. Actually, there was one hot guy. She put her elbows on the table and rested her head atop her hands. Details. Give me details about him. The story about your bad day can wait. Well, he's tall, has bone structure a sculptor would envy, and reeks of confidence. How does he smell? I don't know. I didn't get close enough to sniff him. I plucked the lime from the rim of my glass and squeezed the juice into my drink. Well, that's not true. I did. But when he was that close, we were in a supply closet, and all I could smell was cleaning supplies and musty water. I sipped. Madison's eyes lit up. You didn't? The two of you in the supply closet on your first day at the new office? I did, but it's not what you think. Start from the beginning. I smirked. All right. She definitely thought this story was going to have a different ending. I had a trunk full of last-minute boxes with files and junk from my old office that had to be moved into the new space. I tried to find a parking spot, but there was nothing for blocks, so I parked illegally and made a few trips up to the office with my stuff. On my next-to-last trip down, there was a ticket on my windshield. That sucks. Tell me about it. Almost $200 for those these days. Crappy start to the day, she said. But it could have been worse, I suppose, with you in cars. I had to laugh. Oh, it got worse. That was the best part of my day. What else happened? The meter maid was a few cars away from mine, still giving out tickets. I figured I'd already gotten the ticket, so I might as well finish my unloading. I carried the last of my boxes up to my new office, and when I came back downstairs, every car had a ticket to match mine. Except one. The car parked right in front of me. So the car arrived after the cop left, evading the ticket? Nope. I'm positive it was there before me. She just skipped that one. The reason I'm certain is that it was the same make and model Audi I have, only a newer year. The first time I passed it, I peeked inside to see if they had changed anything in the interior on the newer edition. I noticed there was a pair of driving gloves with the Porsche logo on the front seat. So I know it was the same car that had been parked there for more than an hour because the gloves were still there. Madison sipped her wine and scrunched up her face. The wine's not good? No, it's fine. But driving gloves? Only race car drivers and pompous jerks wear driving gloves. I tipped my drink to her before bringing it to my lips. Exactly! That's exactly what I thought when I saw them. So I re-gifted my parking ticket to the pompous jerk. My car was the same make, model, and color. Why should I have been out $200 when Mr. Porsche Gloves hadn't gotten a fine? The ticket didn't have a name, only the make, model, and VIN number of the car, and the license plate on my carbon copy was barely legible. I figured he wouldn't know his VIN and would probably pay it. He was parked illegally, after all. My best friend smiled from ear to ear. You're my hero. You might want to let me finish the story before you declare that. Her smile wilted. You got caught? I didn't think so, but I had a little mishap. When I leaned over and lifted the wiper to tuck the ticket underneath, somehow a piece of my hair got caught and tangled. Madison's brow furrowed. In the wiper blade? I know, strange. But it was so windy today, and when I went to unwind it, I made it worse. You know my crazy thick hair. I could lose a hairbrush in it for a few days and no one would notice. These waves have a mind of their own. How did you get it out? I yanked until it came free. Only when it finally detached from the car, the windshield wiper was attached to my hair instead of the brand new Audi it belonged to. Madison's hand flew to her mouth as she cracked up. Oh my God. Yeah. Did you leave the owner a note? I took a healthy gulp of my drink, which tasted a little better the more I drank. Does the ticket count as a note? Well, at least there's an upside. There is? Tell me, because right about now, after the day I had, I'm not seeing any upside at all. There's a Greek god in the office. That's good. How long has it been since you've been on a date? 8 years? Trust me, the Greek god won't be asking me out on a date.
Married?
Worse.
Gay?
I laughed. Nope. He's the owner of the Audi I vandalized and then re-gifted my parking ticket to, and apparently he saw me do it.
Crap.
Yeah, crap. Oh, and I have to work with him on a daily basis.
Oh, shit. What does he do?
He's the regional creative director for the company we merged with.
Wait a minute. Isn't that your title?
Yep, and there is only room for one of us. A waiter who wasn't even ours walked by. Madison put out her hand and grabbed him.
We need another vodka seltzer and glass of Merlot immediately.
The next morning, I made a stop on the way to the office. As much as I hated what was happening with my job, apparently I was going to have to work with Bennett for the next few months. And, let's face it, I'd been wrong. I'd damaged his car and left a parking ticket instead of a note. If someone had done that to me, well, I doubted I would even be as polite as he'd been throughout the day. He'd waited until we were alone to call me out on my shit, when he could have made me look bad in front of my new boss. His car was illegally parked in the same spot as yesterday when I arrived. Last night, when I'd replayed the day in my head, I thought perhaps his car had been skipped over by accident, because the meter maid lost track and thought she'd ticketed it already, since it looked identical to mine from the outside. But if that were the case, and he'd already gotten away with it once, why would he park there again today and risk getting another ticket? There were only a few logical answers. One, he was rich and arrogant. Two, he was an idiot. Or three, he knew he wouldn't be getting a parking ticket. Bennett's office door was closed, but I noticed from the bottom that his light was on. I lifted my hand to knock, but hesitated. It would have been easier if he weren't so damn good-looking. Grow a pair, Annalise. I straightened my spine and stood tall before knocking loudly on the door. After a minute, relief started to wash over me as I decided Bennett wasn't in there. He must have left his light on. I was just about to turn away when, without warning, the door whipped open. I jumped in surprise and clutched my chest. You scared the shit out of me! Bennett removed one earbud from his ear.
Did you just say I scared you?
Yes. I wasn't expecting you to open the door. He pulled the other earbud out and let them dangle around his neck. His brow furrowed.
You knocked on my office door, but weren't expecting me to open it?
Your door was shut, and it was quiet. I didn't think you were in there. Bennett held up his iPhone.
I just got back from my run, had my earbuds in.
Music blared from them, and I recognized the song.
Enter Sandman? Really?
My voice hinted at my amusement.
What's wrong with Metallica?
Nothing. Nothing at all. You just don't look like someone who listens to Metallica. He squinted.
And exactly what do I look like I listen to?
I gave him the once-over. He wasn't dressed in the expensive suit and wingtips he'd had on yesterday. Yet even wearing casual clothes, a body-hugging black Under Armour t-shirt and low-hanging sweats, there was something about him that reeked of refinement. Although the way that vein bulged from his bicep was more fine than refinement at the moment. Bennett was older than me, I guess. Early 30s, perhaps. But his body was firm and muscular, and I imagined he looked even more incredible without that shirt on. Blinking myself back from a semi-daze, I remembered he'd asked me a question.
Classical.
I would have taken you for more of a classical music person than Metallica.
That's kind of stereotyping, isn't it? In that case, what should I assume about you? You're blonde and beautiful.
I'm not stupid. He folded his arms over his chest and cocked one brow.
You did get your head stuck to the windshield of my car.
He had a point, and I was most definitely not starting off on the right foot by arguing with him again this morning. Getting myself back on track, I held up the long, slim package I'd picked up on my way to the office. That reminds me, I wanted to apologize for yesterday. Bennett seemed to assess me for a minute. Then he took the wiper blade from my hand.
How the hell did you get your hair stuck to my car anyway?
I felt my face heat.
Let me start off by saying cars aren't my thing. I don't like to drive them and have crap luck with them working properly. At the old office, I could walk to work. Now I have to drive every day. Anyway, I got a parking ticket yesterday morning while I was unpacking boxes from my car. We happen to have the same make, model, and color Audi. Yours was parked illegally, too, but you hadn't gotten a ticket. So I tried to put mine under your windshield wiper, hoping you would pay it. Only a gust of wind came, and my hair somehow got tangled when I lifted the wiper. When I tried to unravel it, I made it worse. I really didn't mean to vandalize your car. His face wasn't giving anything away.
You only meant to make me pay your parking ticket, not break my wiper.
That's right. He smirked.
Now it all makes sense.
Bennett had a water bottle in his hand. He brought it to his lips and took a long gulp, his eyes never leaving me. When he was done, he nodded.
Apology accepted.
Really?
We have to work together. Might as well keep it professional.
I was relieved. Thank you.
I shower at the gym downstairs after my morning run. Give me about 20 minutes, and we can get started going over our accounts.
Okay. Great. See you in a bit. Maybe I'd underestimated Bennett. Just because he was good-looking, I had assumed he would be an egomaniac, and I'd never live down my moment of insanity. When I reached my supply closet office, I jiggled the key in the lock. It was stuck, but eventually it clanked, and the door opened. The smell of cleaning supplies immediately permeated my nose. At least I understood why he'd stuck me in here now. Sighing, I flicked on the light and was surprised to find someone had left a bag on my desk. Assuming it was probably the janitor, I picked it up to move it to where the other chemicals were piled and spotted a handwritten note on top. "You'll be needing this, Bennett."
A gift for me?
Setting my laptop and purse down, I dug inside the bag. It was light, definitely not cleaning chemicals, and the contents were wrapped in tissue paper. Curious, I unwrapped it.
A cowboy hat?
What? You'll be needing this. You'll be needing this. As in for my job. In Texas. Maybe Bennett wasn't that mature after all.
Chapter 4. Tomorrow, maybe I should leave some lingerie. Right on time, Annalise strutted into my office carrying a large cardboard box. She had on the cowboy hat I'd left her to be a dick, only now that she was wearing it, I was thinking with my dick. She looked sexy as hell with her wild blonde hair sticking out all over. I bet she'd look hot as shit in a black lace corset and some spiky heels to go with that cowboy hat. I shook my head to knock that visual from my imagination. But my mind wasn't having it. It was busy thinking of a million ways I'd like to see her wear it. Riding me. Reverse cowgirl. Yeah, not smart, Fox. I looked away for a minute before clearing my throat and walking over to take the box from her hands. Looks good on you. You're going to fit right in at the new office in a few months. At least maybe I'll have a place to work down there that won't get me high from sniffing chemicals all day. I was just screwing with you. Your real office is being set up for you as we speak. Oh, wow, thanks. No problem. I'm sure the cake in the urinals makes the new office smell a lot better. I'm not, I raised a hand and cut her off, joking. The office is the same layout as mine, two doors over. I know you'd like to be closer to me, but that's the best I could drum up. Are you always this obnoxious so early in the morning? She held up a tall coffee mug with a pink sparkly A on it. Because I'm just starting my second cup, and if that's the case, I'm going to need to caffeinate more before I get here. I chuckled. Yep, get used to it. I've been told mornings are my least obnoxious time, so you might want to fill that big mug with something stronger after lunch. She rolled her eyes. Marina, my assistant, our assistant, walked in and dropped an envelope on my desk. She offered Annalise a smile and said good morning while pretending I wasn't in the room. I shook my head when she walked out. By the way, I feel compelled to warn you, don't accidentally eat your new assistant's lunch. Annalise seemed to think I was kidding. Okay? Don't say I didn't warn you. I walked over to the round table in the corner where I normally held small meetings and set her box down. Noticing the label, I said, Bianchi Winery? I thought we were going over all of our accounts to even out the workload and reassign clients between our teams. We are, but I figured it couldn't hurt to show each other our presentations for tomorrow. Maybe we can agree on which is the best one and we won't have to go up against each other. I smirked. Afraid you're going to lose, huh? She sighed. Forget it. Let's just go over the accounts like Jonas asked. God, she's touchy. All right. Why don't we work here? There's more room to spread out. She nodded and pulled out an accordion file folder from her box. As she unfastened the elastic band that kept it neatly compressed, the file expanded, displaying a few dozen compartmentalized individual slots. Each slot had a color-coded label with something typed on it. What's that? It's my quick kit. Your what? Quick kit. She pulled out a bunch of papers from one of the slots and fanned them across the table. There's a client contact sheet with the name and numbers of all the key players, a fact sheet that gives a summary of the product lines we market, a list of my team members who work on the account, some summary budget information, graphics of the client's logos, a listing of preferred fonts and PMS color codes, and a summary of the current project. I stared at her. What? What's all that for? Well, I keep the quick kit in the file cabinet in the marketing bullpen area so that whenever a client calls, anyone can grab the information and be able to discuss the account after just a few minutes of looking over these documents. I also use it when I'm called to meetings to give account updates to the executive team. But I figured we could use it today when we talk about each account. Shit. She's one of those. All super organized and neurotic. I pointed my eyes to her folders. And what's with all the different colors? Each account has its own color, and all of the collateral and files are color-coded so it's easy to file and pull together information. I scratched my chin. You know, I have a theory about people who use color-coding systems. Oh yeah, what's that? They die early from stress. She laughed, but then saw my face. Oh, you're not kidding, are you? I shook my head, slowly. She straightened her folder in front of her. All right, I'll bite. Tell me, why is it that people who prefer color coding die earlier? I told you, stress. That's ridiculous. If anything, my stress level is reduced because of my color coding system. I'm able to find things more easily and don't have to waste time opening every drawer and going through piles of old collateral laying around. I can just scan for a color. That may be true. In fact, I'm pretty sure you'll hear me yelling, fuck, a few times a week when I can't find something I'm looking for. See? I held up a finger. But it's not the color coding in itself that causes stress. It's the incessant need for organization that leads to stress. Someone who color codes thinks everything has its place, and the world doesn't work that way. Not everyone wants to be that organized, and when they don't follow your systems, it inherently makes you stressed. I think you're exaggerating. Just because I like color coding doesn't mean I'm a neurotic organization freak and get upset when things are out of place. Oh yeah? Give me your phone. What? Give me your phone. Don't worry, I won't go through and check out all the duck lip selfies you have stored in there. I just want to check something out. Reluctantly, Annalise held out her phone to me. Things were just as I suspected. Every app was filed and organized. There were 6 different folders, and those were labeled social media, entertainment, shopping, travel, work apps, and utilities. Not one single app was outside of the little organized bubbles. I clicked into the social media bubble, dragged the Facebook app out, and let it loose. Then I went into the shopping folder, took the Amazon icon, and dragged it into the social media bubble. I pulled the eArt app from the work bubble and let it dangle loose on her background. Once I handed it back to her, she scrunched up her face. What is that supposed to prove? Your apps are messy now. It's going to start to drive you nuts. Each time you open up your phone to do something, you'll have a strong urge to file the icons back where they belong. By the end of the week, it will cause you so much stress, you'll give in and fix it all to keep your blood pressure down. That's ridiculous. I shrugged. Okay, we'll see. Annalise straightened in her seat. And what exactly is your system for managing accounts? What are you going to use to review the accounts together today? A list written on the back of an envelope and crayon? Nope, don't need a list. I sat back in my chair and tapped my finger to my temple. Photographic memory. It's all up here. God help us if that's where all the information is, she mumbled. Annalise spent the next 2 hours going over all of her accounts. I'd never admit it out loud, but her hyper-organized file gave her access to a hell of a lot of data right at her fingertips. She was clearly on top of her game. We set aside a few of her summary sheets to note which accounts she thought she could reassign. When it came time to talk about my accounts, not surprisingly, Annalise planned to take notes instead of just listening, like I did. I forgot to bring a notepad, she said. Can I borrow one? Sure. For the sake of teamwork, I grabbed two pads and a pen from my desk drawer. Not thinking anything of it, I tossed one on the table in front of her and the other in front of where I'd been sitting. Annalise noticed the ink on the front before I did. She turned the pad to face her. Shit. I attempted to grab it from her hand, but she pulled it back and out of my reach. What do we have here? Did you draw all of this? I held out my hand. Give me that. She ignored me in favor of studying my doodles some more. No. I arched a brow. No. You're not going to give me my notepad back? How old are you? Apparently, she waved the notebook in the air, displaying my art. The same age as the 12-year-old boy who drew these things. If this is what you do all day at work, I'm not sure what I was worried about. I was thinking I had to compete for the job against a seasoned professional. I had a bad habit of doodling while I listened to music. I did it whenever I was stuck creatively or needed a palate cleanser in between projects. I had no fucking idea why, but the mindless sketching helped clear my busy head, which in turn allowed the creativity to get its turn inside. The habit wouldn't be so bad, maybe a little embarrassing that a 31-year-old man still draws cartoon superheroes at his desk, but nothing to get me in trouble. That is, if the superheroes I doodled daily were male, but they weren't. My superheroes were all women, with pronounced body parts, sort of like the caricatures you can get done by a street artist where your head is 5 times the size of your body and you're roller skating or surfing. You know the ones, right? Probably have one of yourself riding a unicycle tucked away in the back of your closet somewhere. It's ripped and wrinkled, yet you still haven't thrown the damn thing away. Well, mine are similar. Only, it isn't the heads of my creations that are exaggerated. It's the tits, or the ass. Occasionally the lips, if the mood hit me. You get the idea. Jonas had recently warned me again about not leaving that shit around the office after a little incident with a woman from Human Resources who had stopped in unexpectedly and gotten a glimpse. I snatched the pad from Annalise's hand, ripped out the page, and crumpled it into a ball. I doodle to relax. I didn't realize I'd grab that pad. I usually rip the page off and toss it out when I'm done. I apologize. She tilted her head like she was examining me. You apologize, huh? What exactly are you sorry for? Me seeing them, or you sketching characters that objectify women on company time? I'm guessing this is a trick question. Of course, I was only sorry she'd seen them. Both. She squinted and stared at me. You're full of shit. I walked back to my desk, opened the drawer, and deposited the wadded-up doodle page. Closing it, I said, I don't think you're qualified to know when I'm full of shit yet. We've spent, what, an hour with each other in total? Let me ask you something. If I was a guy, say one of your buddies here that you probably go out with for happy hour once in a while, would you have apologized to him? Of course not. Another trick question. I had to think about the right way to answer this one. Luckily, I'd been through HR sensitivity and sexual harassment training, so I was armed with the right answer. If I thought it would offend him, yes. I left out that it wouldn't offend any of the guys I socialized with outside of the office, mostly because I don't hang out with pussies. Figured Jonas would be happy with my restraint if he knew. So you apologized to me because you thought it might offend me? Easy one. Yes. I hope that was the end of the discussion, so I took a seat. Annalise followed suit, but she wasn't letting it go that quickly. So objectifying women is okay, just not when you think you might offend someone with it? I didn't say that. You're assuming I objectify women. I don't think I do. She tossed me a look that called bullshit. I think you're the one who objectifies women. Me? Her eyebrows jumped. I objectify women. How so? Well, that drawing was a superhero. The woman had the power to fly. Every day she leaps from tall buildings and fights crime like a badass. And here you are assuming that because she's a little on the buxom side, she's some sort of demented fantasy. You didn't even take into consideration that Savannah Storm has an IQ of 160 and just yesterday saved an old lady from getting creamed by a bus. Annalise lifted one brow. Savannah Storm? I shrugged. Even her name is badass, isn't it? She shook her head, and I saw the splinter of a smile threatening. And how exactly was I to know what a badass Savannah was, simply from your doodle? Somehow I managed to maintain a serious face. She was wearing a cape, wasn't she? Annalise cracked and laughed. I'm sorry. I must have missed that big clue due to the fact that each one of her breasts was larger than my head. I mean, her IQ should have been obvious from the cape. I shrugged. It happens. But you should really watch jumping to those rash judgments. Some people might be offended and think you're objectifying women. I'll keep that in mind. Good. Then maybe we can get to the important accounts now. Mine.
Chapter 5. I tried to warn him. Even last night, when we'd finished going over our accounts together, I again attempted to bring up today's pitch to Bianchi Winery. But the smug jerk stopped me before I could explain why I knew he didn't have a shot in hell at landing the account. So screw it. I hope he wasted his entire morning on a dog and pony show that was totally unnecessary. I mumbled to myself as I pulled down the half-mile-long dirt road and parked by the giant weeping willow. Coming here always brought a wave of calm over me. Being greeted by rows and rows of neatly planted grapevines, swaying willow trees, and stacked barrels let the serenity seep in through my pores. Getting out of my car, I closed my eyes, took a deep, cleansing breath in, and exhaled some of the stress from the week. Peace. Or so I thought. Until I opened my eyes and noticed a car parked off to the right, next to the big old green tractor. And that car was almost identical to mine. He's still here. Bennett's appointment had been at 10 o'clock this morning. I glanced at the time on my watch, double-checking that I wasn't hours early. But I wasn't. It was almost 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'd figured he'd be long gone by the time I arrived. What the hell could they have been talking about for 5 hours? Knox, the vineyard manager, walked out of the small retail shop carrying a crate of wine, just as I finished getting my files out of the car. He'd worked at the winery since before the first grape seeds were sowed. "Hey, Annie," he waved. I slammed the trunk shut and swung my leather art attaché over my shoulder. "Hey, Knox, you need me to open my trunk again so you can stash my weekend bottles?" I teased.
"Pretty sure I could stash every last bottle in your trunk and Mr. Bianchi wouldn't mind."
I smiled. He was sort of right about that. "Is Matteo in the office or up at the house? I have a business meeting with him."
"Last I saw, he was walking the fields with a visitor. But they might be in the cellar by now. I think he was giving him the full tour."
"Thanks, Knox. Don't let them work you too hard." The door to the office wasn't locked, but no one was inside. So I set my presentation stuff down on the reception desk and went looking for where everyone was hiding. The retail shop door was open, but no one answered when I called. I was just about to turn and head up to the main house when I heard the echoing of voices as I passed by the door leading from the shop to the wine cellar and tasting room. "Hello?" I carefully navigated the stone stairwell in my high heels. Matteo's voice, speaking in Italian, boomed in the distance. But when I reached the bottom, the only person I found was Bennett. He was sitting at one of the alcove tasting tables, his shirt sleeves rolled up, his tie loosened, and a wine glass taster flight on the table in front of him. 3 of the 4 glasses were empty.
"Drinking on the job?" I arched a brow.
He linked his fingers behind his head and leaned back to revel in his smugness.
"What can I say? The owners love me."
I held back my laughter.
"Oh, do they? So you haven't let them see the real you, then?"
Bennett flashed a smile.
A gorgeous one. Jerk.
You wasted a trip out here, Texas. Tried to tell you, but you wouldn't listen.
I sighed. Where's Mateo?
He just got a call and stepped into the fermentation room.
Have you seen Margot?
She ran out to the grocery store.
What are you still doing here, anyway? Were you late for your presentation?
Of course not. Mateo offered to give me a tour so I could see the new vines they planted this year. And then Margot insisted I do a full tasting. I'm like one of the family now.
He leaned toward me and lowered his voice.
Although I'm pretty sure Mrs. Bianchi's into me. Like I said, you got no shot at winning this one.
I somehow managed to keep a straight face. Margot, Mrs. Bianchi is into you? You do know Mateo's her husband, right?
Didn't say I was going to try anything. Just calling it like I see it.
I shook my head. You're unbelievable. The sound of a door opening and shutting turned both our heads toward the back of the tasting room. Every sound reverberated twice as loud down here, including Mateo's steps as he walked toward us. He opened his arms and spoke with his thick Italian accent when he looked up and saw me.
My Annie, you're here. I didn't hear you come in.
Mateo embraced me in a warm hug, then held my face and kissed both of my cheeks.
I was on the phone with my brother. The man, he's still an idiot, even after all these years. He bought goats.
He pinched together all five fingers in the universal Italian gesture for capisce.
Goats! The moron! He bought goats to live on his land in the hills, and he's surprised when they eat half his crops. Such an idiot!
Mateo shook his head.
But never mind that. I introduce you.
He turned to Bennett.
This gentleman is Mr. Fox. He's from one of the big advertising companies you made us to call.
Yeah, we've met. I didn't get a chance to talk to you guys because things have been crazy at the office. But Bennett and I, we work for the same company now. Foster Burnett, the company he worked for when you made the appointment to meet with him a few months ago, it merged with the company I work for, Wren Media. It's now one big advertising agency, Foster Burnett and Wren. So yes, Bennett and I have met. We work together.
Oh, good, he clapped. Because of your friend, he's joining us for dinner tonight.
My eyes jumped to meet Bennett's gloating ones. You're staying for dinner? He grinned like a Cheshire cat and winked.
Mrs. Bianchi invited me.
Mateo had no clue that Bennett's big, dumb smile was him trying to get a rise out of me, since the full-of-himself bastard thought he was invited because the missus was into him. The notion was hilarious, really, because I knew Margot Bianchi, and trust me, she hadn't invited Bennett Fox to stay for dinner because she was into him. And I knew that not because she adored her husband, which happened to be true, but because Margot Bianchi was a perpetual matchmaker. There was only one reason she would invite a young man to dinner. Because she wanted to set him up with her daughter.
Oh? Mrs. Bianchi invited you, did she?
I couldn't wait to wipe that smirk off his face. Bennett picked up his wine and swirled it around a few times before bringing it to his grinning lips.
She did.
I exaggerated a smile.
That's great. I think you'll really enjoy my mother's cooking.
Bennett was mid-sip. I watched his brows draw down in confusion and then rise up in shock, right before he started to choke on his wine.
I can't believe you invited the enemy to dinner.
My mother lifted the top off a pot and stirred her sauce.
He's a very handsome man, and he has a good job.
Yes, I know. He has my job, Mom.
He's 31, a good age for a man to start settling down. If you start to make babies in your 40s like a lot of young people today, you have a teenager in your 50s when you're running out of energy to keep up.
I refilled my wine glass. When it came to mothers, I'd always thought of myself as lucky. After she and my father split up, she'd practically raised me on her own. She worked full-time and yet never missed a soccer game or a school function. While most of my friends were bitching about their meddling married mother or absent divorced mom who was out on the prowl for a new husband, I never complained, until I hit the ripe old age of 25.
Apparently, that was when the shadow of an old maid started to follow women around, according to the way my mother acted. Bennett is not your future son-in-law, Mom. Trust me on that one. He's an arrogant, condescending, cartoon-drawing, job-stealing pain in the ass. My mom set the ladle down on the greasy spoon and pursed her lips at me. I think you're exaggerating, honey. I leveled her with a stare. He thought you invited him to stay for dinner because you were into him. Her forehead creased. Into him? Yes, as in you were interested in him for yourself, and he knows you're married. She laughed. Oh, honey, he's a handsome man. I'm guessing most women are into him, so he's gotten used to mistaking a woman being friendly with a woman being friendly for a reason. It started to feel like I could say anything about Bennett, and Mom would have an excuse for it. He's trying to steal my job. Your company's merged. That's an unfortunate situation, but it's not something that he had anything to do with. He abuses kittens, I deadpanned. My mother shook her head. You're trying to find any excuse you can not to like the man. I don't have to find any excuse. He hands me the reasons on a silver platter whenever I'm in his presence. Mom lowered the flame to simmer and took another bottle out of the wine refrigerator. Do you think Bennett will like the O2 cab? I gave up. Sure, I think he'll love it.
So, did you grow up here, living at a winery?
I'd avoided Bennett before dinner by going outside on the porch to play with Sherlock, my mom and Mateo's chocolate lab. Unfortunately, he found me. No, I wish. I tossed a tennis ball over the porch railing and into the rows of vines. Sherlock took off running. My mom and I lived in the Palisades area for most of my life. She didn't meet Mateo until I was in college. I bought him for her 50th birthday. Bennett leaned against the post, one hand casually tucked into his pants pocket.
Don't let my mother know that. All I got her was a Keurig that she stashed away in the back of a closet to collect dust.
I smiled. Growing up, she always said she wanted to go to Italy. I'd just gotten my first job when she was about to turn 50, so I saved up for a 10-day tour of Rome and Tuscany. Mateo owned one of the vineyards our tour stopped at. They hit it off, and 2 months after she came back, he had his vineyard up for sale and decided to move to the U.S. to be closer to her. I pointed to the grape farm. He bought this place, and they got married right over there on the one-year anniversary of the day they met.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's a great guy. My mom deserved to meet him. Sherlock came running back with the ball in his mouth, but instead of dropping it at my feet, the traitor took it to Bennett. He reached down and scratched his head.
What's your name, boy?
His name's Sherlock. Bennett whipped the ball back out to the farm, and off went man's best friend.
So, you could have mentioned that Bianchi Winery was your family.
My jaw dropped. Are you joking? I tried to, multiple times. But every time I attempted to tell you, you interrupted me to drone on about how you were going to win the account and how much the owners love you. You were pretty cocky about it, especially this afternoon telling me my mother was into you.
Yeah, sorry about saying that. I just wanted to screw with you, rattle your confidence before your presentation.
Nice, very nice. He unleashed his charming smile.
What can I say? All's fair in love and war.
So we're at war, are we? And here I was thinking the better candidate would get the job based on merit, not because the other one sabotaged them. Bennett stood and winked.
I wasn't talking about war. You love me already.
I laughed. God, you're such a pompous ass. I stayed on the porch to finish playing catch with Sherlock while Bennett wandered inside the house. I was surprised when he came back out with his suit jacket on, a glass of wine in one hand, and his leather portfolio case in the other. Where are you off to? He extended the glass of wine to me, but when I reached out to take it, he pulled it back and sipped.
Your mom asked me to bring you this on the way out.
Where are you going?
Figured I'd head home.
Should you be driving? My parents tend to pour wine like it's water.
Nah, I'm good. I only did one set of tastings, and I drank them over a few hours.
Oh, okay. But we haven't had dinner yet.
I know.